loser talk. You gotta start acting more like me and my team.
Coaches, welcome back to the Talking Split podcast. I am Rob Calder, joined by high performance coach for all of country at the moment, Zoe Carr.
Thank you for having me. Hopefully not for much longer.
No, hopefully been some movement in that space, and joined by basketball development officer Nick Mihai. Welcome, Nick.
Good to be back, and happy to say my jacket is off this time, Zoe. So
no scratch on the mic. No scratching mics. That's a good start. We have the Simpsons drop. It's been a little while since we have one of those, so thought we had to get one of those back. So thanks everyone for listening. Of course, you can find all the Talking Split information, Instagram, X, YouTube, Drills, podcast, all that sort of stuff. If there is anything you want us to talk about, by all means, shoot us a message or an email and we'll get researching on those topics. Just a bit of a reminder, we do have Coach Welfare Month coming up for us. So October, we're going to try and drop as much information as we possibly can to try and get coaches in a better space mentally, physically, and everything in that sort of space. With November, we're going to try and do a little bit of a daily challenge for people to try and buy into as well, with the hope that the months are a little bit warmer, brighter, sunnier. There's more hours in the day to do things and those sorts of things. So that's what we're looking to do over the course. We're going to jump straight in this week more than anything else. So the topic this week is how to lose a game in 10 ways. Taken because I was scrolling through stuff the other day and saw how to lose a guy in 10 ways, I think it was, and thought, oh, we can manipulate
10
this.
Days.
10 days, I think,
was it? Yeah. Okay. You've seen it, have you, Nick?
Yeah, I have, and I have a
movie
similar
review
list.
Time.
Yeah, it's actually not bad. It's one of Sarah's favorites. it's definitely one of her go-tos. It's actually pretty good. Like it,
Zoe gave much the same review. She's like, "Look, it's not bad.
Yeah,
like,
there's something there."
Yeah, okay. Yeah,
it builds a suspense. It gives that like happy ever after at the end. I think it's it's got some good notes.
Does it really build suspense in a rom-com? Like, surely you know what the outcome's going to be.
You do, but then like it hits that stage where you just never know. Like you're like, oh, is this going to work? Because now they're getting into an argument at the end, and it all comes together. But yeah, I know that it's a blueprint of the rom com. But anyway,
yeah, that's all right. All right, so we're going to go through our 10. There's a couple of little bonus ones we've got in there as well. Our first one, the easiest way to lose a game, focusing too much on the refs. Zoe, do you want to take us off on this one?
Oh, why have you thrown to me?
No particular reason.
Okay.
You sit literally 4 feet away from the referee department, so I assume this would be your jam.
Yeah. In the refs. Look, it would be hypocritical for me to say that it's something that, you should always be pretty good at and lay off the refs. And because, when you get into the throes of it, sometimes – things happen and emotions take over, but that's more the core of it, I think. Not so much getting caught up in referees, but more emotional regulation and making sure that you understand that, especially depending on what age group you're coaching. If you're coaching like young juniors, they will now start to copy what you do. So you are a role model for that. If you're coaching seniors, it's a similar thing, but, it's almost opening the door to allow you and your team to focus on uncontrollables and not focus on what needs to happen next. Everybody's human and they make mistakes, including referees, but there's often things that happen before that. Like, I can remember vividly coaching when I was coaching Siebel with Knox here, or was it NBL 1 then?
NBL 1.
It was NBL 1. And we'd given up an O board.
You know the funniest part? Like, Zoe started to talk about refs and she's just pulled the sleeves up. Yeah. It's like, all right. A little bit of a triggering moment for it.
Let's get to work.
We'd given up an O board and then fouled. Yep. And so then our team was, pretty upset. They didn't think they'd fouled. But the moral of the story is don't give up the O board. We should have had the ball. So there's a lot of things that can come into play. But I think it's more about how you manage your emotion and regulate your emotion in those instances when there's potentially a call that you don't agree with or something happening that you don't agree with.
Yeah, and it's like we remember when Bill Mildenhall was working here, like Bill officiated like hundreds of NBL games over the course, and his thing every time we'd normally roll into the office on a Monday morning going, Bill, this is what happened on the weekend. Explain this to us. And, we'd have a little bit of a laugh back and forth. He's like, Rob, you do realise the refs don't care who wins this game. I'm like, well, actually, Bill, I reckon if I've been yelling at someone for 40 minutes, they might start caring as to what that 50-50 call looks like. But also understand who we're dealing with, which are people that don't always get the number of reps to be put in a decision-making situation where they have to try and get something really correct with the eyes of everyone on them. If a player misses a shot, everyone just sits there and goes, oh, well, you know, they're going to miss shots. Like a ref gets a call wrong and everyone's up in arms on it. And that can have a massive impact. Like Zoe, you mentioned like the impact that can have with your players, that sort of copycat behaviour, because I think that's accurate. It's amazing how many teams I've been a part of where I've said nothing all game and my team said nothing and we all just sit there and go, oh, okay, well, we just move on. Whereas if I'm irate, my players become irate, then I start becoming antagonistic on the sidelines. That becomes an issue. Like, how do you deal with it, Nick?
Yeah, first of all, just to go back a step, just to, piggybacking on what Zoe was saying before, like it's okay if you need clarification or you don't understand how a call's being made. If you respectfully ask a question, that's fine. Like, we're talking more about writing referees constantly. Yeah. Like, it just distracts you so much that you're probably missing the most important part within the game anyway. Like, there's so many times that I've gone back and I've had those games where it's a bit of white line fever and I'm up and down onto the ref, and then I was like, I missed that. I could have changed that action. I've just hit the cable again. I've done it again, Rob. And it's too late to start again.
We're not starting again. We're not pushing starting again. Through.
Yeah, all right. We'll push through. Yeah. But like, there's so many things that I've missed that I didn't even know what was happening. And that was really disappointing on my part as well. Like, some things that I put in place, and I've spoken about them before, I don't think you can, like, for me, I do get my emotions very high as well. So like, I'm not the type of person that'll be able to just suppress everything and sit perfectly still. I don't think that's the answer. I think you've got to try and divert yourself away from that emotion as quickly as possible. So some of the things I had, obviously the drinking the water, any time that I was starting to get a bit upset, I'd have a drink of water, and I just absolutely exploded my limit of water drinking in a game, which was really
three quarter time. He's like, I gotta go.
Hydration. Like, my doctor's like, incredible how much water you've been drinking.
How have you put on like 6 kilos during the game?
In water. Like, it's just water weight. But anyway, the other thing is, like, and I won't say this on the pod, but there was something that my assistant coach, he would have a sentence he would say to me that was so out there, that is something that I would not hear, that it would trigger me to go, why would you say something so random? It would actually spiral me back into the present a little bit as quickly as possible. So I think when you have those moments, you've got to have some sort of plan in place to help divert you back to what you're actually supposed to be looking at, which is the game.
Well, and I think, like, you know, I mentioned about being a bit hypocritical towards, you know, for coaches about how to behave towards referees, but also towards players. We talk to them all the time about what's next, let it go, what's next, and then get hung up on the first, you know, bit of adversity that might come our way. So it's important that we're practicing what we preach.
Well, and to be honest, like, I know from my coaching as well, when I started working at BV, I was on my best behaviour, because the last thing I wanted to happen was to get a tech on a Friday night, and I walk in on a Monday morning and all of a sudden everyone knows about this tech, and it's like, oh, that's the guy that's supposed to be educating all of Basketball Victoria's coaches. This seems a little bit hypocritical if all of a sudden my behaviour is not where it needs to be. And for a lot of coaches listening to this, they need to be aware that if you're coaching a game, whether it be a Friday night, a Saturday, whatever it is, people will see you ride refs and think, okay, that's acceptable behaviour because they're doing it, I can do it. And no, you can't. Like, you should be setting a better example for people in that space. And that, I mean, that's across the board. But how often, as you said, Nick, does it take you away from what you're actually supposed to be doing? And like, I mean, Zoe and I have coached together quite a bit, obviously. And there were times where a call would go against us for whatever reason, she'd turn around and I'd have to wear a little bit every now and again, because it's like, well, okay, yeah, say whatever you want to me. Just don't say it to the ref, because that might cost us two free throws coming up. Like, it was that kind of thing. So you do have to have just a bit of a plan in place, I think, in that sort of space. The next one, not finding the balance between skill and system development in teaching, Nick. So what would that look like, I suppose? Like, how can that cost you a game?
Well, to put simply, if you're doing something like 5-on-0 for 20 minutes and then you get frustrated in the game because they're not executing it, it's because you haven't taught them the skill of performing whatever action it is within that 5-on-0 or when they actually play. So it's not just about running a system that'll get the scores. They're actually making decisions within that. And teams have different schemes as well. You can have this game plan where you come in and go, I'm going to run this action. It's such a difficult thing to guard. And then someone's going to figure it out, run a different scout on you, and then shut it down. What adjustments are your players going to make then? In order for them to make adjustments and make different reads, you need to create some skill development to do it. So 3-on-2, 2-on-1, those sorts of things, like where are the advantages? What does it look like? They need to learn that just as much as they need to learn your system of play or your offenses.
Yep. So where does it sort of impact where you see coaches at the moment?
Well, I'd go back even a step before that and say that at the moment I'm seeing a lot of skill base dictating decision making, and so a lack of skill base dictating decision making. So the right decision is to make a pass with my left hand, but I can't do that. So I'm either going to not make that pass, or I'm going to pass with my right and turn it over. So you could have the greatest offense of all time or system of all time, but if they don't have the ability to actually execute that with a skill set, and then to layer on top of that the decision making and that Nick's talking about, when things change, because you know your offense, your pretty offense that you put in may work once, will probably work once, may work twice, won't work three times, and so when that third time comes, what are you going to do? And the answer can't be, I'll go to another offense. That's where the decision-making stuff comes in and becomes really important. And when you're going through skill development, I've found decision-making is always a part of that. So you're layering both at the same time, whereas if you're doing what Nick said of, you know, just sort of like 5-on-0, just, you know, almost like running the puke on on semi-pro.
I'm glad you're on semi-pro there, because I was trying to work out where that was from, where it was going. Yeah.
There will be some listeners that get that reference. I'm pretty disappointed they're not in this room, but that's okay. But yeah, if you're running it like that, it's not going to transfer the way that you're expecting, and the skill package is a part of that. You know, if you're running this offense that gets you a corner three, but you can't. Can't shoot the corner three, that offense is irrelevant, you know. So making sure skill set and decision making should always come first, and that should seamlessly transition into your system.
I had a game once where, and this was so frustrating for me, where we got beat basically on a closeout right at the end. Then I checked my training plan.
No closeouts?
Yeah, no. There's shell, but like ticking the box on certain things, but closeouts wasn't in there. Yeah,
focus on rotations.
Or do this and closeout. So how am I supposed to then go, oh, you didn't do what I told you to do, when I didn't actually tell him that week, right?
Like, yep. Well, and there's no reason to say you can't be like the old El Paso way. You can have both. Mm. Like there is very much a way that you can get skill set development within system, so to speak, but you do have to be careful. I was talking to an under-12 coach last week, actually, and not from Victoria. They hit us up from another state. They said, look, you know, my kids are really struggling with the baseline out of bounds. I'm like, well, look, send it through to me and I'll have a little bit of a look at it, and if I can give you any feedback. And they sent me like 4 pages. I'm like, well, what's going on? Like, how many have you sent? He's like, oh, 4. We run 4 baseline out of bounds. I'm like, mate, you're coaching under 12s. Like, be elated if they can remember where to stand on the first one, let alone 4 things. I'm like, simplify. Like, lose these 3, keep that one, because I think that one's probably your best out of all of them. And they hit me up over the weekend. They're like, actually, that worked really well. We only ran one thing. I'm like, yeah, under 12 kids aren't remembering a scout defensively. Like, but if they cut, yeah, they'll probably get open.
But mm. also, how often, like, I think that's a bit of a trap that coaches do get into as well. I've certainly done it, in that you have this massive playbook of sideline and baseline out of bounds. Yep. Think genuinely how often those actions happen for your team. So you might defend them. But just for your team, you might get 4 or 5 out of baseline and out of bounds a game, if you're lucky. Only a couple of sideline out of bounds probably a game, if any, and you're spending all that time. So it's about prioritizing your time into what's important and what you're going to need and what's going to help your team be successful.
I think what you're talking about applies to everything, not just sideline out of bounds. We can so easily overcomplicate and put too much in with everything, like our defensive schemes and how we're going to press. We're going to run three different presses and we're going to run these little delay traps. And like that's a great way to lose a game because they're going to be good at nothing. They're just going to know everything at a, like an okay level at best.
No, absolutely. One of the big ones onto our next one now is substitutions. And substitutions have lost many a coach, many a game over the years, and if nothing else, have caused massive conflict between coach, parent, and player over the course. How would substitution, Zoe, cost you a game down the street?
Well, there's a few ways. And I've said this on the pod before, how coaches on a Friday night are getting 10 players through is it blows my mind. So if you are someone that is trying to allow everyone to play, which is great, it's what we want because that's how they get better. But your weaker players are scheduled to be on at certain times, then, you know, making sure that you have them, you know, at times that probably don't hurt. You want to have them have had all their minutes before, say, the last 4 minutes of the last quarter if you're going to have a push to try and win the game. So making sure you give those times, you give those opportunities at the right times, and that, you know, you could say towards the end of the second or midway through the second quarter before and the start of the third or, you know, right before three-quarter time or those sort of things. You could say that, but that will change every game depending on how the game is going. But making sure you've got the opportunities for your athletes until you then head into the last part. Another way is not subbing for subbing's sake, so more so when you're getting into higher levels, subbing with no rhyme or reason. You know, oh, we're just going to make a sub. But why? Like, you're going to take this player out who's doing – you know, X, Y, and Z, and what does this player that you're bringing in actually give you? And it might be for a rest and those sort of things. Of course, they're a part of it, but if it's a case of, oh, I just need to get this player in, I don't think, especially at a senior level, I don't think that's enough. I think it's got to be, there's got to be a reason for that sub. And probably the last one I will say is having, and it probably combines two of our titles, I guess, of how you can lose games, is a player is in foul trouble and you don't take them out, or you know that they're a player that, you know, one foul leads to two quickly, and they're on three and they've just picked up their fourth and you know, you haven't made that adjustment, or you make that adjustment and you leave them out for too long and almost ice them, like if they are your best player and you ice them. So that is such a long-winded way of saying that there is a lot of ways that subbing can really hurt, and probably being too focused on the other team as well. I think sometimes, you know, matchups are important, but sometimes I think we get so, how am I going to match up against them, instead of let's make them match up against us.
Yep. Nick, do you see it often where coaches will go back to their starters just because they're starters rather than the feel of the game, I suppose?
Yeah, big time. And I think a quick way or an easy way to kind of negate that and understand that it's not just necessarily your starters all the time that are going to deliver for you is to have some data. Like, it's just, because it's a very difficult thing to review without it, I find. Like, just doing the eye test and just watching video and things like that, it's a little more difficult. So I have lost games where I've come back with a certain group and then I've rolled the starting five back on going, yeah, this is it, here we go. And then it's gone back. Yeah. And then upon review, I'm like, well, okay, the team that actually got me to the space is probably the one that's going to win the game, right? Like, that's some reflection on myself. So, yeah, but you see it all the time. Like, you know, when I was DOC and I would sit there, I'll be like, why'd you make that sub at the end? You were down 15, you're within two, and now you lost by eight. oh, but I had these players and I needed to score. But you were scoring before that. Mm. Like, it's just interesting to it's an interesting space because you do need a little bit of data. Like, plus minus is obviously an easy one. Plus minus for starting for groups of five would be great if you've got that.
Yeah.
You know?
But difficult to get.
Yeah,
especially in game.
Yeah.
That sort of stuff.
Like, well, especially in juniors as yeah, well. Like, yeah, that is tough. You're relying mostly on the eye test in juniors. But, yeah, I think with subbing as well, you know, understanding roles. So one of the things I always ask state teams when we're – state team staff when we're going into selection is who would be your – you know, go get it group. Like, we need the ball back. Who would be that group? Who's your group that's going to get us a three if we need a three? Who's your group that's up the floor? Who's your zone group? Who's your zone breaker group? Who's, like, all this sort of stuff. And so having those things in mind also, I think, help with subbing of, okay,
You're not making a decision on the spot.
Yeah, there's a minute and a half left and we're down six. We need the ball back. Let's put the go get it group on and we know who that is and go after it. Instead of, like trying to figure that out on the spot.
And you may, just heads up, you may be wrong still. Like, it may not work still.
Yep.
But it's having a little bit of a plan of like, well, percentage wise, I have a high percentage putting this group on the floor as opposed to this group.
We used to have that sitting on the bench effectively, and there are a number – like, I've still got the sheet somewhere if anyone wants it, but we would have scenarios effectively, need a three, need a score off, you know, 0.2 of a set, like who are you going to, those types of things. So we'd have that sitting on the bench. So it was a case of, look, put those players on in front of you. You can see it, and it's like, actually, maybe not tonight. That's not the person we need this time around, or – or get someone else. But if you can do some pre-work so that you're not having to try and make a decision in the heat of the moment where close game, emotions are high, tensions are high, that can just alleviate a little bit of pressure on that one more than anything else. Another way to lose a game, timeouts, Nick. Like, how have you seen timeouts cost teams over the course?
In general, when I hear the coaches talking and they're talking about the past possession that's just happened and what they could have done better, and they're not focusing on what's next, you know, being specific, knowing, again, it comes back to subbing as well, having the right group in front of you that you know can read a whiteboard under pressure, knowing which player can inbound the ball for you and not turn it over or has the highest chance to, because you can put some kids out there and they're just not those types of kids, and that's okay. They're maybe the ones that receive the ball. They're just too much pressure to pass the ball in. Another one would probably be in the timeouts when you're drawing something up and you're going, we're going to score this way. But if they take that away and you haven't given some sort of pressure valve release or whatever you want to call it to get the ball in, and then, okay, we're going to try and get this. If we don't get this, here's where we're going to catch the ball. We're going to play out of an on ball. We're going to try and get feet in the paint. I think not having that plan B. And then probably the last thing on the timeout is not telling them what they're going to do after they score.
Yeah.
So if
one possession only.
One possession, we score, we cheer, instead of, hey, we're going to run this. When we score, we're in this defense.
Yep. That makes sense. Zoe, where have you seen it go wrong? Would one of them potentially be using a timeout before you're about to lose it just to make sure that you've used the timeout?
That's one. Yep. I understand the, I suppose, pressure that comes with that. Like, oh, well, we've got it. We might as well use it. But I've been in situations where we were the not as talented team. And
I don't think there's anything wrong with saying water. It's okay.
I love that you thought about it. It would be better for you to say words. Yeah,
you've drawn talented. More attention to not it. As,
either way, and we used that timeout and it gave them an opportunity. We were up and it gave them the opportunity to have another hit or touch point with their coach. And we ended up losing. And it was a real lesson in that moment that we just needed the game over. Like, don't give them an opportunity to go back to their coach. But so some for me are timeouts on opposition's ball.
Killer.
I cannot. And I know there's times where it has worked in the past. I know, you know, what if we want to set up our offense? Cool. You've just allowed them to, you know, any coach worth their salt is going in there saying they've called this two setup, probably a press. This is how we get through it. And now this is what we're running. And you've given them again that touch point with their coach. So I am such a believer of do not give them the opportunity. If they want to call a timeout to run something, they can burn theirs. Giving too much info in a timeout. So probably your under 12s and under 14s can probably only take on two things, like two instructions.
I'd be elated if they got two.
Yeah. I reckon you lose them after like 5-6 seconds. Yeah. So
but even
make sure you rebound.
But even as you get older, even seniors, like I always used to be 3 points max with NBL 1 and Siebel. So, you know, it might be all well and good to just sort of like have a bit of a brain dump and throw all this information at them. But keeping in mind it's 1 minute and it's not a minute because it takes them time to get in, and then for some reason the refs are blowing their whistle in your timeout with 20 seconds to go to get back in.
So point one, stay off the refs.
I just don't understand that. I keep trying to – actually, I have good chats with the referees. We're getting somewhere. But so it's not a minute, so it's less than that. They're trying to catch their breath. They're trying to have a bit of a rest, and then we come and bombard them with, you know, 5, 6, 7 instructions for them to then go back onto the floor. So keeping those instructions simple and finishing on the last thing, the thing you're about to do. So the last instruction for me is, you know, if we're about to walk out and play D, that's what I talk about last, especially with youth. So that at least if they haven't absorbed any of the other stuff, they get what we're just about to do right now.
Yep. What about calling a timeout on your free throws?
I don't think I've ever done that.
No, I don't reckon I have.
You've never seen it? I've seen it.
I've seen it. I've just never done it.
Yeah, I've never done it either. Yeah. But I just can't think of a better way to freeze out your own shooter when you're down.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong. All the kids that I've coached, love them all equally. All fantastic people. However, I don't need them in their head more than they're going to be in their head by dragging this out for another minute.
Yeah, the longer you put them in that space.
Not a chance. Like, I know the kids I've coached. They need to get that shot done and get it over with as quickly as possible.
Yeah. And I think the
you can visibly see when this happens, because I have seen it. And when they walk out back, the look of fear.
Yeah. They've listened to nothing.
I just want to go, it's okay. I know you're under pressure. Don't stress. Like, it's nothing I can do now. Like,
no, they've listened to nothing in that timeout when they walk out of there. I mean, you mentioned before, Zoe, like too much information. That can also be the assistant coach to the head coach.
Mm.
And we see so often.
Well, that was going to be my next one, taking way too long to get into the timeout.
Mm.
Like, I've seen people, you know, walking out to split line to stand there and have their conversation with their assistant coach, and then by the time they get back in, they're, you know, there's no time for what they've got to say. So, you know, it should just be a little 6 to 10 second hit.
I do the walkout. I do the walkout.
Explain to me why.
I'd like to gather my thoughts. Sometimes the emotions are quite high, so I don't want to straight away go in there, because I want to think logically rather than emotionally. I do want to hear from the assistant, but it's very specific what I want to hear. Like, it's on-ball coverage.
Can you do that next to the timeout, though?
That was going to be my next question.
What do you mean?
Like,
well, do you need to walk away? Can you?
I step out, hear him, and I go, I don't know. And maybe it's just a process. This is something I've conditioned myself to do.
I've always wondered. It's always been. I've always been curious as to why people do that. So
Maybe because I'm up and down the sidelines so much, maybe the assistant hasn't delivered all the information to me. I do want to hear from them for, you know, a few seconds before I come in.
Yep.
You know, am I on the right page? I don't think they're doing this. Well, they are. So maybe have a think about this. And then as I'm walking back, I'm still thinking about it, and then I come in.
Yeah, cool. Because I don't think there's anything wrong with talking to the assistant. No problem with that. And you don't want to have that chat whilst you're also in the timeout with your players.
Mm.
I'd probably just do it a little bit closer to where the timeout is, and it's like, look, we're standing right here. Let's just quickly chat and then duck in and try and get in the timeout. But again, each to their own on that one. Number five, not jumping on issues that are brewing. Zoe.
Yeah. It's sometimes it's tough because, you know, you just hope things will go away, or, you know, there might be some like niggly things happening with your teams or
court time.
Time problems or clearly people that are upset and not happy. And we just kind of ignore it. And then I can almost assure you in a game that matters, that's where it all comes to a head.
Oh, you've got enough problems trying to win the game, let alone trying to deal with something that could have been dealt with off court.
Yeah, because it could be something like someone's not happy with their role or doesn't accept or doesn't understand their role. They go outside of what that role is because you haven't had that conversation. So, you know, it's the old saying, like, problems are like mushrooms. If they get they grow if you leave them in the dark. Like, it's that similar sort of thing. If you just hit it on the head early enough and they still might not be happy with their role, but at least you can then hold them to that. Or, you know, if there's some sort of infighting going with a couple of players, you know, you can sort that and find ways also within your maybe rotations. Maybe they're not on the floor at the same time or, you know, those sort of things. So making sure you're dealing with all of that. Could even, if you're up with a senior team, it could be staff related. It could be staff aren't happy. They're not feeling like they're being listened to or valued or don't like the role that they've been given or those sort of things. So you turn to the bench and ask how many fouls they've got and they haven't done their job properly because they're unhappy, you know, those sort of things. So making sure you deal with that as quickly as possible.
Yep.
Yeah, transparency, honesty. I mean, what's your saying, Rob? If it's problems that – how did you phrase it again? It was
problems that go away by themselves, come back by themselves.
Yeah, it's a
from
big
– Garfield comic.
Is it really?
Yeah,
right.
I resonate very heavily with garlic. Not a big fan of Mondays and do like lasagna.
Agreed. I do too. Yeah, it's funny. It's funny you
mentioned philosopher.
Yeah, very. Philosophizer. Very, it's really got me reflecting now. But yeah, but I agree. It's if you let it go, like, it does escalate. I've seen teams over the years that have not had the discussion when a kid has an expectation of court time, because that's a really common one, right? Like, there's an expectation, this is how many minutes I should be getting every game. They're getting less than that, and it's brewing in the background. And then another kid may not get as many minutes as they thought, and now they have a little group, and now it's escalating out of control. This is something that you can have conversations with and maybe focus on something different than court time. Like, yep, let's work on your skill development. We need you to be able to dribble right-handed and left-handed. So we're going to work on that. I'm going to do a little plan for you. So really try and focus them not somewhere else but on something bigger than just how many minutes you play.
Yeah, and issues are usually communication-based. Mm-hmm. Like, you can normally fix any issue if you just communicate better, mm-hmm, as a staff or with your players in particular. So I think communication will solve a lot of those dramas. When we get into the communication, so our next one, getting emotionally engaged with an opposition coach or player. This is one of yours, Nick. Talk us through it.
What I've observed is...
While standing on the bench or on the other side?
No, it's very similar to the referees, right? Like, it's not appropriate behaviour. Players think when they see you, because you're in a position of power or respect or a certain level of respect anyway, they think it's acceptable behaviour when you do that. I'm not, again, not saying to be perfect, but at the same time, if you're going the opposition coach or trying to get into a to and fro with a player, like, what are you actually focusing on? Yep. Like, what action is hurting you? Because I don't think you can answer that question because you're too busy having a go at someone else on the court. Yeah.
And difficult because, I mean, as is life, you don't like every player and you don't like every coach. Like, I remember there was one year Zoe and I were coaching under 18 boys and we came back for that sort of January tournament, I think it was. And all of a sudden we had the team of the greatest trash talkers in the world because they felt like they had to, like, chest up to everyone and point fingers at everyone. It's like, what has happened here over the summer break? And it's like, hey, only bad players need to do this. We'd like to think we're not bad players here. Where has this come from? And it was one of those ones that just went a little bit sideways when it didn't need to. But it's amazing how quickly I got sucked into that as well, because one of our players would say something to another player who would say something back, and then I'd be like, hey, you can't say that to them. And then all of a sudden I'm getting sucked in. It's like, solve your stuff first. Like, your player started this. Find a way to nip this in the bud so that it's not an ongoing thing. Because look, we are all emotional people that want to win when we go and coach games. Like, even when we sit here and we have the lens of, oh, we're just in it for fun and development, there is not a coach alive that would rather be up by one than down by one, even with all of that in mind. We get caught in what's going on there, and you know, you don't like every coach that you coach against. Like, you don't like every player because they're not your players. There are plenty of players out there that I'm like, I couldn't coach that kid. Like, that, they would do my head in. But then you kind of think back and it's like, I actually had a kid probably pretty similar to that kid and actually quite liked them. Like, it's, there are those types of players out there. You don't have to stay in your lane and don't engage with it, I think, is the biggest thing in that sort of space. How do you compartmentalize that, I suppose, Zoe?
I have always had the theory that as a player, bad players talk trash. So if there was some type of, you know, jawing or something going on, I always took it as a compliment and just ignored it, and try and instill the same thing in the athletes. From a coaching perspective, you know, it might be something like you're asking a question of a referee and then the opposition coach interjects. God, that drives me nuts. But I think the point of it is if you're going to spend your time, that how I try to change my thinking, because my first thinking was, well, now I want to have a go at you, was you're now thinking about me. Great. You think about me while I'll think about the game. And that's a tick. That's now is an opportunity. And I'd often change my defense in that scenario, because it's just something probably a bit more aggressive. Try and get a couple of steals, try to keep the opposition coach thinking about what I'm doing, and lose their focus off of their team on what they need to do. But it's hard. We're human, and you know, especially when it's something where we want to try and stick up for our players. That's where I found it the most difficult. I had an opposition coach going at one of my players, and I have to admit I didn't handle it well. Like, I got emotional and I had a crack at that coach and let them know that their behaviour was not appropriate, but my behaviour wasn't appropriate either. But I felt like I needed to do that to protect my player. And but again, in that moment, I'm thinking about them and I'm not thinking about us.
Yep. There was a cracking podcast, and I can't remember which one it is. If I remember what it is, I'll put it in the show notes, that was about Kevin Garnett. They were having a discussion with him about the era that he grew up playing in and all that sort of stuff. And like, Kevin Garnett was one of the world's greatest trash talkers. Like, he grew up in the Jordan era, Gary Payton, all those guys. And he's like, the hardest player to play against was Tim Duncan, because he just wouldn't engage. Like, he just, whatever, you could say anything to him, just wouldn't engage. And he's like, and that got in my head, because like, Garnett lived on that sort of bravado almost. It's like, you know, I'm going to be the big dog that barks at everyone sort of stuff. And there was a great example of Stephen Adams. So the New Zealand player, he was matched up on Garnett. Garnett started to go at him. He's like, hey, no English, bro, like New Zealand. And Garnett didn't know any different. The Kiwis didn't speak. It's like, he just thought, he's like, oh, okay, well, there's nothing I can do. And it's like, for about 6 years, it went on with Adams just going, no English. Like, no English. Garnett had nowhere to go. And it's like, outstanding work from Stephen Adams.
Brilliant response.
Like, just honestly, excellent work. Number seven, white line micromanaging coaching and not taking care of yourself, Zoe.
Yeah, well, the not taking care of yourself is the one that, the part of that that really resonates with me, because we can get lost in this. You know, we can throw everything we've got at it. I know, and I've said on the pod, so I'm sure I can say it again, when, particularly in Rob's last season of coaching on a Friday night, like, that dictated our whole weekend as to what sort of mood the house was going to be, whether we went out and did anything, whether we just sat at home and, you know, ate and drank and were sad. Like, it was, but I, like I say that as if it's funny. It's not. It's it can affect so many other areas of our lives. And if we're not in a position where we're taking care of ourselves and we're taking care of our relationships and we're taking care of, you know, we've got other things outside of what we're doing and coaching and, you know, like hobbies and or reading or taking even just time to relax. Because thinking back of when I was in the throes of particularly the VJBL and it was work all day, go straight to practice, you know, back to work, then you're at another practice, then you're back to work, then you're at a game, you're out till, you know, your game's 9:40. It's not long enough to bother going home, so you just go straight to the game and you end up sitting there for a few hours and all these sort of things. Then you get your game, then you got to you're set up for practice, you look through your game tape, you do, you know, all these sort of things on top of trying to have a life, relationships, friends, you know, social, engaging in your hobbies and things that keep you a little bit sane, it can get hard. So that, for me, I found I took a couple of weeks leave a couple of weeks ago and didn't realize how much I needed it because the first session back on a Saturday was like I was looking forward to it. I had a great time. There was a great vibe with the session. The session plan itself was better because I had the energy and the want to put more time into it, to, you know, make sure it flowed better and hit the nail on the head with what we needed to do. And it was great because I was almost refreshed. And I think we – a big thing for coaches, and that's where the Coach Wellbeing Month I think is going to be really important. We get lost. We get lost in this coaching because we're givers by nature and we want to do the absolute best we can. But coaching can swallow you. And that's where then you get emotional and you say something you shouldn't or you yell at someone you shouldn't or you react in a way that you shouldn't because you haven't taken care of yourself.
Or the quality of what you love to do drops.
Yeah.
I had an incident. No, not an incident. I had a situation like that as well where Darren was overseas, so he couldn't coach the KC Youth League team. So there was like a 3 to 4 week period there where I was coaching Youth League, assistant coaching NBL1, and coaching the 18 ones. And I felt the quality of my work on all three went down.
Yep.
Straight away. And as soon as I dropped one, it slightly went up. And then if I drop another one, like let's say the season finished for the 18s, it went up even further. Yep. So it was a clear correlation to me that, okay, well, I think I represent a lot of coaches out there that say yes to everything because mm-hmm. they think if they say no, they're going to miss out. And that's not the case. I can tell you, like, the opportunities in Victoria for basketball will just keep coming. You can say no, and you are the priority as a coach. That you have to look after yourself. You spoke about things outside of basketball. I think it's work on yourself outside of basketball. If you don't want to do another hobby because you don't want to add stuff on, you know, and it doesn't have to be like physical. It can go read a book or something. Like, you know, I don't know, whatever you're into, but
yep. And it matters. Like, and this is where we sort of combine both of these into the same one, because when you're not taking care of yourself, it impacts so heavily on your coaching in that space. And even just the video game controller coaches, pass it, get it, rebound it, shoot it. It's like, just dial it back a little bit. Like, your kids aren't hearing any of that anyway. You're doing it to try and have control over that. So is there an area of your life where you need to get a little bit of control back so that you're not trying to over control when you coach in that sort of space? So it is. I think it's basketball is pretty much 12 months of the year in Victoria. Like, there's always something going on, whether it be the season, whether it be preseason games, whether it be grading, whether it be various tournaments. If you want to be playing, you can pretty much be playing whenever you want to be playing. Not for everyone, completely understand that. But, you know, being able to pick and choose, I think as a coach, does make a bit of a difference. And even talking to someone the other day, it's like, are you going back to coaching? I'm like, look, not anytime soon. It's like, I don't want to commit to 12 months because I know when I do commit to coaching, I commit to coaching. Like, it is, I'll move everything else around it to make sure that I don't miss a game or I don't miss a training. Like, it is the central focus of what I do. I can't do that for 12 months. If it was a 6-month season, you know, over summer from like October to March, yeah, I probably would, because, you know, longer days, happier sun, all those sorts of things, just how it works. But in its present form, I probably can't commit to doing that because it will impact on so many other areas of what goes on in my life as well. So just being mindful, you don't have to say yes to everything. Say yes to enough stuff to keep coaching, obviously, because we want coaches, but just be mindful of where you find the balancing act with that one. Speaking of balancing acts, role clarity, Nick Mihai, this is number 8. What do you got for us?
Yeah, I think understand, like, it's, how do I put this nicely? Some players are better at scoring certain areas of the floor. Some players are better at passing. Some players do a great job of dribbling the ball down the pressure. Now, I'm not saying to not teach those kids those sort of skill sets. Of course, you've got to do that, but some are just superior at it, and the best ones at it should be put into that position. They should know who the best shooters are at the type, like at the VC level, the VJL1 level, whatever it is. They should know who the shooters are. They should know who the drivers are and who the passers are. I think understanding your role and having role clarity is really important. I think it's also important, obviously, for the assistant coach as well to have a clear role in what their job is. Otherwise, they may say something that is contrary to what you're saying, and now we have a confused player on the floor, and that may result in a turnover, which is a great way to lose a game as well.
Yep. How do you get role clarity without pigeonholing kids, Zoe? Because that is something that we do see a fair bit. It's like, hey, that's the tall kid, so they are only playing the post, or that's our best point guard, so they'll only ever play as the point guard.
Yeah, I think part of that, when you're talking about, you know, tall kid playing the post, etc., I think that's got to come into your planning of your playbook, and there needs to be – I know there's a bit of a consensus, particularly at the senior level, about a bit of a hatred for equal opportunity basketball. But I think for juniors, it's good. I think it helps put people in positions where they all get a chance at everything. And then when you're in your skill development stuff, that's where you could maybe focus in a little more on their position. But then as a coach, you need to know how to get through that equal opportunity offense, how to get, say, your best shooter a shot, their shot, or the ball inside to the big after they cut. So that stuff, I don't think the as they get older, your point guards definitely need to know it. But if you're talking 12s and 14s, they probably don't need to know that. You can manipulate that yourself. But role clarity is really hard. I actually don't really believe in role clarity discussions probably below under 16s. I think as you start to hit under 16s and you know, players start to find their form and who they are and what they are, not to say they can't improve and get better in other areas, but you've got generally a lot of growing is done by then, well, particularly in the girls, a lot of growing is done by then, so we can sort of start to figure out where they're going to land. But I think for the younger athletes, I just think, Saying to a young athlete, oh, your job is to get this player the ball, or your job is to rebound and defend. Would you come back for that if you were like 11? Probably not.
I don't think you should specifically say it. No, like, so, I think it's, yeah.
But like as you get to older age groups and seniors and things like that, obviously that changes. But again, if you're talking still in juniors, you know, effort should be an absolute non-negotiable, attention and effort, but making sure too that it's, okay, here are your strengths. We want it. This is how we will use them in our system or style of play. Here are the areas of improvement. This is how we'll work on them and practice. So it's like almost like saying, please don't do those in a game yet. You're not ready. but we're gonna address those in practice. Obviously, once you get to seniors, it can be a more frank conversation of, we need you to get, you know, a double-double every game, you know, from inside the block. This is how we're going to get you the ball. Here's where you need to be better, you know, those sort of things. But again, that's when you're talking to adults who should, in theory, have the brain development to manage that conversation and not take it in a way that, you know, always think back to the incident you had when you told a player that they should have 50 points and the defender got upset. Like, because they're young, they don't process those conversations the same way, say, an adult does.
And maybe when I thought about role clarity, like, it's a little bit more vague. So I think, like, role clarity is important from top age under 14s onwards. I don't think it starts at 16s personally. And I'm not suggesting that you go, this is your job. These are the things you can do in the game. Absolutely not. But it was more in a space of making sure that you highlight their strengths. They know what they are just by the actions that they're performing and where they're cutting, but they still have opportunities to work on other things as well. But the role clarity is, well, my strength is what I want to go to first, but I need to also be able to perform these things that I'm not great at, but I'm good at.
Well, it depends, I suppose, if you're looking at a team concept as well, because from a team concept, everyone should know what their role is within the team, because, say, under 12s, for example, everyone's a guard. Like, that's just the reality of it. So your role, if you happen to be the wing that's running the lane, is to hit the tees, get out wide, spread the floor. That is a role that you would play depending on if you were kid number one or kid number 10 in that team. So role clarity, yes, individual things might start from that 14, 16 area. I think role clarity as a team, though, even younger again, let the players know what you expect from them. That's their role. They have to play their role as best they possibly can. But again, that comes back to communication. We've got two to go. Zoe, I think you're on this one. Not changing from plan A if it's not working.
It's a really good way to lose a game, especially from a defensive perspective. If you've worked on a scout and it hasn't quite worked and you're adamant that it's going to work, you know, you might give it a few possessions, but that there has to be a time where you make a change. If you're not willing to make that change, it's your ego talking. It might not be that you make that change for the rest of the game. It might be that you make the change for, you know, a quarter or a few possessions, and then you go back to what you were trying to do once they've seen some success. But yeah, sitting in it is tough, and especially when you do a scout or you give up a game plan and it's not working, if you hold in it for too long, you're going to lose the trust of your athletes. So the next time you say this is our game plan or this is our scout, the buy-in is probably going to be less and less.
Yep,
it is a good one, because how many times have you seen, and I've seen this a few times on Friday night, where the coach is on the sideline and they might be up a little bit so they can probably do this, and then they end up coming back, but they're so adamant that they want this offense to work and it's not working that they're just like, I'm not going to move from this until we get it right. I always used to love asking them, like, why? Why do you want to keep running it? It's like, if we get it right. So you think if you get it right, perfect, it's just going to work from now on? No, right? Like, it's not working for a reason. You have to change a wrinkle. Maybe some part of it isn't working. What part of that is not working? It's a great way to lose a game. Like, it's just an easy way to go, this guy or girl is just sitting in the same offense and I'm just going to keep pinching it the same way every single time. Until you like, good coach is just going to take away your plan A and go, let's see what your plan B is.
I absolutely remember a coach doing that. And we switched out a particular screen, and I'm not even kidding, we would have got at least 8 to 10 steals off it, but they kept running it. And it got to a point where my girls were looking at me going, do we still do this? I'm like, what, steal the ball and score? Yes, please. Like, if they're going to stay in it, we keep going. Make them do something else, and then we'll adjust to that if we have to. But yeah, it was. I mean, I very much enjoyed it because we got the win because of it and made the final. So
it is very ego driven, isn't it?
It's like,
it's right because I taught it, and they have to execute it. And when they do it perfect,
yep,
then we're going to win.
Yeah, or but I've watched all this tape and I've done all this scout and I've spent all this time on this game plan, and the constant in that is I, like I and me, and it shouldn't be about that. It should be about them. And that's where those adjustments need to be made.
Got to build rapport a little bit as well with your players. I've had players who go, hey, Nick, you know, I know you want us to hard show this, but we need to switch it if you want me to stay in front of the ball. All right, do it.
Yeah. Yep.
Gets me the win. I don't care.
Well, and
I think it's the mature thing to do, though. Mm. Like, that's ultimately, you want to have that relationship with your players where they can tell you when something's not going to work. They're the ones that have to do it. All we have to do is sit on the sidelines and say, oh, good job or bad job, or here's where you adjust. They're the ones actually having to do it. So more collaboration, I think, in that space is better. Like, work out what your plan A is with them. You might be responsible for plan B, C, and D. And, you know, if you get down to E, F, and G, you're probably in bigger trouble anyway, so don't worry about it too much. But I think that's the important part, is work with your players to come up with plan A, and then it's you're all in this together. And that's the important part. Last one, though. Practice didn't reflect the game, lack of preparation, or going through special situations. Nick?
Yeah, like just coming in and thinking this is what everyone's doing, and you're just defending, say, one action, and that action doesn't happen, and now all of a sudden you're on the back foot trying to teach kids how to defend certain actions. We used to have something. I actually got it off Dom Lenossier, so defending common actions. So we would go through every week side pick and roll, middle pick and roll, flare screens, pin downs, and it was like two. It got to a point where it was just 2-3 minutes of each. So they got reps out of it. So when they would experience it, whatever the offense was, because it's hard to do a lot of scout, like in-depth scout for juniors, even at under 18s, because they've got four other teams they're playing for and they're probably getting scouts as well. So, well, if we can defend these four common things, then we're good, because like the other stuff we'll navigate through as the game goes along. But if we can get through the common actions, it works. But if you're just not prepared, or let's say you're a coach that hey, we're just going to play 5-on-5 for an hour and a half. You're not really teaching any concept or any action. So when a Spain pick and roll rolls out and they've never seen one before and they don't know how to navigate it and you have to do it during the game, great way to get yourself down by 10 points.
Yep. That makes perfect sense. And that's like, did you notice, Zoe, a difference or the correlation between when you had a good practice and a good game? Like, did you know a bad game was coming based on a practice?
There were games practices I'd walk out of and say, oh, I'm worried. Worried about this week. And it was often when we were playing a team we knew we were better than. And so there was like an air of, we'll
be fine.
We'll be fine. Yeah. It's like, actually, no, they're the ones you definitely lose. Like, it always tends to happen that way. So, yeah, there's been some that I've sort of bounced out of practice and been pretty pumped with it. And then we get to the games and it's carried through, which is always obviously the aim. But with the preparation side too, it doesn't matter what you know as a coach, and it doesn't matter what you think is going to help in game. If you want to change up, let's say you think, oh, a 1-3-1 zone is going to win us this game now, mid-game, and you try and throw that on and you've never done it at practice, going to be, but depending on the age, it's going to be a bit of a disaster. So the common actions thing is brilliant. And sometimes you just have to take it as a learning. You look at it and you go, okay, well, we weren't able to come up in game with our schemes of how to combat that. So we're going to go away next time and, you know, we're going to work on some stuff that I think would work if we play them again. And we're going to add that to the common actions, or we're going to add that to our skill development session and make sure that if it does come up again, I can throw whatever it is on, whether it be an on-ball screen coverage or something that's going to really help you along the way, because otherwise that lack of, again, the lack of prepared coaches find that their players, they always seem to have problems with their players. Their players are, they seem to say that they're rude, or they don't listen, or they don't do what they're told, or they don't do this, they don't do that.
Or they're not disciplined like they used to be.
Yes.
That's my favourite one.
Yeah.
What it really is they're not bought in. and they're not bought in because you haven't given them a reason to be bought in. Now, sometimes there are kids that are just, they misbehave. Yeah, like, so I'm not saying it's all the time, but often, especially if you've got like a whole team, they haven't bought in and they've probably picked up on the fact that there's a lack of preparation. We were sitting before one of our trainings once and a player came over to us. We were watching a session. Our training was going to be next. And a player came over and says, "We don't even have a session plan." And I was like, I don't know what you want me to say. Like, this isn't my team. This isn't, I don't know.
Agreed.
Okay.
Yeah. Here's one I prepared earlier.
But they pick up on it. And, they do. And that,
there was part of me too that was like, hey, the way you behave, I probably wouldn't put a session plan together either.
But because, is it chicken and egg?
And that's the problem. Like, which one is the actual problem in all that?
Mm.
So difficult.
Mm. Yeah.
Our last one we had was your wife putting a moz on you.
There was a bit more to it.
Oh, yeah, there is more to it. I didn't think it would come up in the pod because I was just checking that Rob would read my list. But all right, we'll go through it. So basically, for me, a great way to lose a game is to tell your wife that if you lose this game, you're going to have 4 weeks off, and she puts a moz on you because
she wants the 4 weeks off.
She wants the 4 weeks off.
Yeah.
Yeah, and she wants those long weekends and things like that, yeah. So
turns out your partner controls quite a lot that's going on in the world.
Yeah, I've really, really told the world about my personal life. That one, but there you go. No, we meet in the middle and we just do what Sarah says. So
wise. All right, we are into social split talk for the week.
Something to post on Facebook. Let's go.
It's like me on Twitter.
So this is from Tommy Fleetwood, who was the PGA Tour Championship winner during the week, has had a long history of just coming up just a little bit short and finally cracked it this week. So this is a little bit of an excerpt from his press conference.
I'm so blessed with the family that I have and the love that surrounds me and the support that I get, that it just makes everything that much easier, really, whether it goes good or bad. You know, whatever would have happened today, I'd have walked off the 18th hole and Oscar would have given me a hug and we'd have gone home and everything would have been great. Like, everything would have been fine. I'd have been gutted. Oscar, you know, we'd have all been, you know, gutted and hurt a little bit. But, you know, life would still have been great. And I think that's something that I would never take for granted. But that I'm so lucky, that I'm so lucky with. And when you say, why do people like me so much? I've always been very lucky that I make a great connection with people. I try and be, if I could give my kids one piece of advice, I mean, there's tons of advice, but I always tell them to be a good person first. And I've always tried to do that. My dad always told me that. Even when I was an aspiring young amateur golfer, professional golfer, he always wanted me to be, he always said, person first, golfer second. You know, you're a good person first. Whatever happens after that, you know, you try and be a good golfer second. I've always tried to be that.
So great, mainly because we've gone through an entire podcast talking about how to win games and more to the point, how to not lose them. But it's very easy to lose sight of what we're actually supposed to be doing as coaches. And ultimately, it is our job to make good people first, or at least help in the shaping of good people rather than be all in on wins and losses. And it's amazing how many times you come across a kid and it's like, hey, this is a really well put together kid. And you talk to the parents and it's like, okay, they're pretty sound with how they view things. But then you go back and you look at some of the coaches they've had and it's like, oh, that's why. Like, it's, I know what that coach is about. I know what that coach would have done with them. They didn't prioritise winning and losing. They prioritised making sure that the player is supported and developed in that space. And it's just easy to lose sight of, I think, coming out of it. And it's really, I think, refreshing to hear. Like, it's obviously, golf is a very different sport to basketball. Like, the individual versus the team sort of side of things aside. But it is refreshing to hear someone that's faced a little bit of adversity. Like, he's had some of the all-time greatest losses, like where putts have just rimmed out and he's gone from first to fourth and out. Like, he finally cracked it this week. And whilst it matters to him, and there's a clip going around with Scottie Scheffler as well that's probably about a month and a half old now, which we might play next week, talking about what actually matters. And the golf is just such a small part of what actually matters. And I think that's something that we as coaches have to take into account. Use basketball as the vehicle. That's, basketball will get us from point A to point B to point C to point D. That's fine. But the journey you go on will change depending on who the coach is, who the people are around you, what you prioritise, what you focus on. And for mine, that's kind of the important part, I think, of coaches. And we spoke a lot about communication and connection and relationship in this podcast as well, and that's an important part of it for sure. So just making sure you do have that little bit of a time to check in with your players, ask questions, have some fun with it, because honestly the easiest way to lose a basketball game, to be honest, is make your kids hate the sport. Like, you know, they won't want to turn up and play for you or play with friends or whatever the case might be. So find a way to have that connection, I think, with them is a big part of what we should be doing. That's it for us this week. Thanks, everyone, for listening once again. We'll be back next week on the pod. Good luck with the games. Remember, Coach Wellbeing Month coming up. If there's anything you want, if there's any topics you would like, slide into the DMs and we'll help you out from there.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Talking Split Podcast. Make sure you like and comment on your favorite podcast platform. And don't forget to share and subscribe so that you never miss an episode.